96.7 or 99.7, whichever you prefer.
I'm Pat Shea. I'll be your host today of The Contact Show. Today we have Dr. Dustin Bingaman, a licensed psychologist from Punxsutawney, and we're going to have several interesting topics. Before we begin, I want to remind everybody this Christmas season to think of our friends at the Salvation Army, the Du Bois Free Clinic, and the Du Bois Food Pantry. They need your help this time of year, more so than at any other time, because they've got a lot of people in need that are coming for their services. So do remember to help them out as you think of what you might do this Christmas season. We're going to go ahead and go to a commercial, and after that, we will be back with some very interesting topics.
Hi folks, are you having problems with your child at home? Is their behavior a problem? Are you at your wit's end? If so, call us for more information. Community County Services. We provide family-based mental health. Call for information at 371-8066. We work to help you keep your family together in a healthy way. Community County Services, 371-8066.
Good morning again. You're on The Contact Show. I'm Pat Shea, your host, and today we have Dr. Dustin Bingaman. He is a licensed psychologist from Punxsutawney, and we have some interesting topics we're going to talk about. Good morning, Dr. Bingaman, and thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Well, you're very welcome. And today there are several things that are hot topics, and I wanted Dr. Bingaman to talk about them with us. We're going to start off with bipolar disorder. You know, there's a bit of a controversy with children being diagnosed as having bipolar disorder. I certainly think that's possible, but Dr. Bingaman has some insight on why some psychologists are slow or hesitant to throw out the bipolar diagnosis on children, anybody under 18. So why do you think there's reluctance to do that, Dr. Bingaman?
Thanks, Pat. I think among mental health workers, you often see a reluctance because there's a lot of other disorders that, especially in teenagers, that mimic bipolar disorder. ADHD, one that comes to mind. You see a lot of impulsivity and mood dysregulation with ADHD. ODD is another disorder. Oppositional defiance, where there's a lot of mood issues and impulsivity, and even things like conduct disorder or anxiety. So I think a lot of practitioners aren't quick to use the label bipolar disorder with children or teenagers because, you know, they want to be accurate. And a lot of those other childhood disorders present first, and they're reluctant to use the diagnosis bipolar disorder. Now, when somebody gets to be a later teen or in their early 20s, that's often when somebody might get that first diagnosis of bipolar disorder. But there's a lot of symptoms that overlap between those childhood disorders and bipolar disorder.
Yes, and I can imagine if you have a child that's in a rough environment, they might be reacting behaviorally to whatever's going on in their home, and it might be a little difficult to fine-tune what's going on.
Absolutely. They're still, you know, usually in their home they grew up in. You know, teenagers are hormonal and have all those social pressures going on. You know, by the time you get to your later teen years and in your early 20s, a lot of that stuff is kind of teased out and you can be more accurate.
Well, I can certainly attest that sometimes with teenagers it's very difficult to know what's going on in their head. So I can see how that would be concerning. And I guess it's very important to make sure you get the correct diagnosis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to have the correct diagnosis. And I think sometimes, too, you know, as a psychologist, I don't prescribe medications. But, you know, sometimes, you know, psychiatrists might be more reluctant to try, like, mood stabilizers with teenagers. I think by the time you're an adult, you know, they're willing to try that a little bit more. But I think it comes back to accuracy and, you know, making sure you're right.
Yes, and I've personally noticed, even with my own children, that sometimes they have some concerning behaviors and you might start thinking, gosh, I wonder if they have something. But sometimes they kind of grow out of whatever's going on and the behavior stops or improves over time. So I guess time is also important to observe and give them an opportunity to mature to see what exactly is going on.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, like with ADHD, your brain is fully developed by your late teens, early 20s. So when you should see an improvement in things like impulsivity and, you know, being able to control your own behavior and that kind of thing, which again is another reason people are probably reluctant to, you know, diagnose bipolar disorder earlier.
And one thing I just thought of, one thing that's huge with teenagers is staying up late, a lot later than I think they should. And they have sleepovers where they may stay up all night playing video games or watching TV. And of course, one of the issues with bipolar disorder is sleep. So if they're not sleeping well just because they're teenagers, that certainly doesn't mean they're bipolar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll tell you, a lot of people understand the depression end of bipolar disorder better. You know, they can see when somebody's sad or down or not doing the things that they enjoy. I think the manic end of bipolar disorder is the more misunderstood piece. And that is, you know, gone several days without sleeping, but their energy is still really good. And, you know, they might have racing thoughts and what we call pressured speech, where they're talking very fastly. But people usually can recognize the depression symptoms. It's the manic symptoms that are sometimes the ones that they don't quite understand as much.
Yes, and I imagine sometimes the manic piece is almost a positive because they're very productive, they're getting lots of things done, and they may seem upbeat. And
absolutely. People
happy.
Often don't view mania as a bad thing because they might like that energy. Usually family members are the ones that will throw up a red flag and say, you know, your behavior seems off, or I've noticed these kind of things. Unfortunately, you know, if a person truly is manic, they might not be receptive to taking that advice from family or people that know them well.
Yes, they like the up end. They don't care for the down end when they're more depressed. So that makes sense. Let's move on to the next topic. And this is another big one that we're all dealing with, even in my household. And I'm sure you know people directly that are dealing with this. We are seeing an epidemic issue with kids, even very young kids, staring into a computer screen, a tablet screen, or even your phone. I know my son will literally grab the phone out of my hand and want to look at the phone. Fortunately, I've not seen them looking at things that would be very concerning on their own. But if you would let them, our kids would be on their phone from the minute they woke up till the minute they fell asleep, and they might even fall asleep if we would let them, watching their phones or tablets or whatever. So that has become a real problem. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I would absolutely agree with you. It's a problem. I mean, you could do the most basic Google search and find all kinds of data on, you know, increased depression and anxiety for kids and teenagers that are glued to electronics and iPads and cell phones and things. There's a lot more like cyberbullying that goes on when you're scrolling through Facebook. You know, people are making comparisons, their own physical appearance to people online. You know, people, when they post on Facebook and social media, they're kind of giving the highlights of their life. You know, I bought the new car, and look at my new house. They're generally not putting things like the car got repoed and today they foreclosed, you know? So, I mean, they're taking these micro comparisons and applying it to their own life, and it leads to a lot more depression and anxiety symptoms, or, you know, feeling like they're not as far in life as they should be. But absolutely, kids are glued to the electronics. They don't want to give them up. You go into a restaurant, like you said, and everybody's got a cell phone in front of them and there's no social interaction going on. And we're wired for social interaction. And I think we need to put the electronics down and do more interacting with each other.
Yes, definitely. And I think part of it is our parenting skills have changed, or our parenting styles have changed. I know when I was a little boy, we didn't have cell phones, but we had the telephone. And I remember very clearly, you weren't supposed to call anybody during dinner time. You weren't supposed to call after 9 p.m. You weren't supposed to call before 8:30 a.m. And doggone it, Pat, get off that phone. You've been on it for 20 minutes. Well, I regularly see kids of all ages have it in their hand for hours. And you're right, they're not interacting. Last year, my wife and I took our three kids to Disney World. And we're walking down Main Street in Disney. And the two oldest kids were texting on their phone and looking at the phone. And I tried to be patient, but after about an hour of that, I said, you know what? I paid a lot of money for you guys to come to Disney World. If you wanted to stare at your phone, we could have stayed home for free. So I wasn't very happy with that. I read an article that was written by a doctor at New York's Presbyterian Hospital, and he mentioned concerns about sleep deprivation. Apparently, the blue light in your cell phone, watching it too much can disrupt your sleep, and it leads to fatigue and even poor academic focus, because if you're tired or your eyes hurt because you've been staring at the phone, you're not going to be too engaged with your schooling.
Absolutely.
And sleep, as we mentioned with bipolar disorder, that's a big thing for your mental and physical health.
Absolutely, Pat. I mean, sleep is very important for, you know, not only your mood, but really your cognitive abilities. I mean, your memory and attention is going to be much sharper when you're getting good sleep. Now, you know, it's one thing to, you know, go a night without good sleep and kind of muster through the next day. But if you're consistently not getting good sleep, it's definitely going to impact, you know, attention and memory and mood. So, I would agree. You know, with the electronics, I think we should be prioritizing like in-person interaction. It's almost like once the kid gets an iPad, they've lost the ability to play with like toys and how to interact and, you know, that kind of thing. But we need to set limits on electronics and, you know, an hour a day or, you know, put it down and go play with your kid in person.
That is a great point. You know, limits, absolutely. Now, a lot of parents probably cringed when they heard you say 1 hour, but you know what? Have some limit. If you want it to be 2 hours or 3 hours, I guess that's up to you. An hour would certainly be reasonable, but I think a lot of times, even with me, to be honest with you, we go to church, and one of the ways to get our little one to be silent is to give him the phone.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's talking loudly and being a bit disruptive. So I think it's almost a babysitter.
Well, I would agree. And listen, I think you use your judgment as a parent and you find the balance. You know, if you and your wife are doing something important and you need the kid to be entertained a little bit, maybe give him a little extra time. But I think you should disengage from that at some point. Go spend some time, encourage play dates, encourage getting outside, you know, getting your hands dirty, you know, swimming in the creek, not this time of the year, but when you can, just so kids are doing things outdoors.
Yes. And I think a lot of people aren't realizing that they have issues with obesity that are really worsened with a child sitting and staring at the screen for hours at a time. And physical issues. I know I've worked at a computer for 30 years, and if I don't have a monitor that's set at just the right height, my neck bothers me, my eyes get strained, and of course you get headaches. So there's all kinds of things that can happen, even with these kids developing and they're still growing. They might be creating neck and back issues for life. They might be affecting their vision. And all of those things will build on their development over time. So that's something that you guys and the listening audience need to be very aware of. We really do need to put some limits, and we need to act more parental and not let the kids determine how long they're on the phone.
Well, and I'll tell you, so I definitely think like even basic social skills as far as solving conflict and interacting with each other. I mean, we learn those things by actually interacting with people and being in those situations. If you're always glued to a tablet or an iPhone, you know, you're missing out on that. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some good aspects of it. I know my kid will get on there and he likes geography, so he'll find out where a city is in the country or whatever. but there's a lot of other negative aspects. And I guess the word that comes to me is a balance. You need to find a balance.
Yes. And of course, as he gets older, his interest is probably going to shift from geography to maybe biology. And you'll have to be extra careful at that point. So I think this is something that's very relevant, and I hope people are really considering it. I guess as we think maybe a little deeper on this, we're causing our kids to withdraw.
Absolutely. Withdraw in, you know, not being with peers, not being with family, not interacting with them, and just having those normal life experiences. The experiences are more through the technology versus actually doing them. And I think that hands-on learning and actually doing them is much better for them.
Yes. We have a teen, and our teen, we often have to say, come on downstairs. You don't need to be in your bedroom, because she loves to go in her bedroom and use her phone. And she has even at times talked about, can't I be homeschooled? And I'm telling her, no, you need that interaction with the kids. And gosh, if she were homeschooled, she'd never leave her room.
Absolutely, which would lead to more isolation. And honestly, when you have that level of isolation, the chances of having other mental health disorders like depression, anxiety, go way up.
Yes, being alone is not the best for your mood.
Yeah, it's okay to have a friend online, but honestly, you need in-person friends, friends that want to go have lunch, friends that want to do things with you, and for kids, play dates, ride your bicycle, maybe play sports. You know, that's a great way to make friends, but you just can't always do all of those things online.
Yes, even online dating. I've got friends that have been online dating the same person for years, and I chuckle because I always thought the idea of dating is to get together.
That's what I thought too, Pat.
Yes, yes. So our society has really changed, and it's not all for the good.
And again, you know, as humans, we're wired for social interaction. We're wired to be in person, smiling, you know, making eye contact, cracking a joke, those kind of things. It just doesn't happen the same way online.
And part of the schooling is to help with that socialization and help you overcome problems. I know I often tell the story that I got into one fight each year in high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And each time I got in a fight, I got left alone for the rest of the year. But of course, today I'd get arrested because they have a policeman on site. But that was part of my growing up. You had this physical interaction that you kind of learned who was the boss and what boundaries were.
Yeah.
And I stood up for myself when I was getting picked on and didn't get picked on the rest of the year.
Well, I'll tell you, I think technology has invaded our schools. You'll hear kids talk about taking their cell phones and that kind of thing. And I just saw an article the other day that talked about how maybe at times technology is being overused in the schools, like, you know, the iPad being used for rewards and things. And honestly, I think, you know, maybe an extra recess or running around the gym and, you know, getting some physical activity would be more beneficial.
Yes, absolutely. And imagination doesn't develop when your phone is doing the thinking for you.
I would agree.
Yes. So we're going to move on to our most controversial and interesting topic that I picked. In our national news, we hear a lot of comment about the furry phenomenon. That's where kids are exploring their thoughts about being an animal or feeling like an animal. And we hear stories about kids buying fake tails and wearing them to school and out in the community, and ears or even full costumes. Now, some of that is kids just play acting, but it's gone to the point where we hear stories of kids asking for litter boxes for the bathroom at school so they can act out further as a cat. And I'm thankful to say I checked with all of our local schools, and in our area, we don't have any school district that's providing a litter box for a child pretending to be a cat. So I'm proud to be in the Du Bois area, and I would not want to be in one of those cities that was letting kids act out on their wishful thinking as far as them feeling like they should be a cat. And I guess my question is there some official diagnosis where somebody can be recognized as being a cat?
Thanks for the question, Pat. So I've heard these things in the community as well. You know, in the DSM is the manual, the diagnostic manual for diagnosing mental health disorders. And there is no specific diagnosis for this issue that you're talking about. Now, having said that, I mean, if a person was doing these things, I definitely think secondary issues would be things like depression, anxiety, self-esteem issues, identity issues, and really a lot of what we talked about with the screen time with, you know, maybe lacking some of the social skills. You know, you're not necessarily helping your kid if you're encouraging these kind of behaviors, you know, to express necessarily who they are whenever, you know, they're going to have to function in this world that we're living in where, you know, society is not going to be nice. So, I mean, I think, you know, coming back to like the parenting issue, you know, we shouldn't be encouraging that. And there is no specific DSM disorder. However, if a person is doing those things, I think secondary issues would be like depression, anxiety, loneliness, maybe increased rates of, you know, suicide and that kind of thing.
Yes. And, you know, as I think about it, I'm sure a lot of this is parenting as well. The cell phone use, we talked about how parents can control that. The bipolar disorder, maybe some of the issue is the kid's behavior because of the parents letting them stay up all night and have disrupted sleep patterns. And with this furry stuff, you know, my dad would not let me go to school with a tail on. He would
demand, mine wouldn't either.
Yeah, mine would demand that I take the tail off. And if I refused, he would yank it off. I can't imagine parents letting their kids go to school with a tail and allowing them to present as being a cat. I just can't
imagine. I sure hope not. And, you know, I don't know how much of this, you know, in the Punxsutawney area, this wasn't going on. You'll hear about this like in pop culture throughout the community, but you know, my kid goes to the school there and I know there was no litter box in the bathroom, you know. But I think once this does get into the news, sometimes it takes on a life of itself. I do agree. It comes back to some parenting too and using common sense. I mean, I think as a parent and even as a clinician, we're trying to teach people to be functional adults. And I don't see how encouraging that behavior is teaching somebody to be a functional adult, you know, to hold a job and to take care of adult responsibilities.
Yes, I certainly would not hire somebody that came to an interview with a tail on their belt. I would not hire them at all. You know, part of our life is fitting into society. We don't have to be identical. We are allowed to be unique, and we are to, in some cases, celebrate difference. But we need to have some boundary, and I definitely think a tail is a good boundary to not allow our kids and even adults. I think you're just plain bizarre if you feel the need to wear a tail. Interestingly, I spoke to one of my teen daughter's friends about this, and this was what she told me. Well, you know what? That might be just how they express themselves. Well, there's a time and place for expression. And I don't think wearing a tail to school or asking to use a litter box is a legitimate expression.
I can't speak to other areas of the country, but I know here in, you know, Dubois, Punxsutawney, Brookville, Indiana area where I generally work, I'm not seeing this as a common problem, or I'm not hearing clients coming in and talking about it. So I don't know if it's going on in major cities, but I don't hear it here.
Well, thank God I live in Dubois. We're going to go to a commercial, and then we'll wrap up.
LifespanFamilyServices.com provides foster care and adoption services throughout this area. Lifespan helps train you, support you, and works with you to make you a quality foster parent. If you have any interest in fostering, please call us today at 814-375-1314. We have a foster parent here today, and I'd like to ask, what is one thing that you thought was the most important reason to use Lifespan Family Services as your foster care provider?
Whenever my husband and I were researching foster agencies to work with, we were drawn to Lifespan. And then whenever we began to reach out, Lifespan was very responsive in getting back to us and being very patient while they walked us through the steps that we needed to take in order to become approved foster parent.
Was it an easy process?
Yes, with the guidance of our caseworker, we were able to take the trainings, receive our clearances, meet all of our home requirements in a very timely manner.
So folks, if you'd like to foster, we will help you on your journey to become a quality foster parent. LifespanFamilyServices.com.
Okay, thanks for listening to the Contact Program today. We've had three interesting topics, and you've been listening to Dr. Dustin Bingaman from Punxsutawney. During the break, he told me he could be reached at New Hope Psychological Services. That's his practice in Punxsutawney. You can Google for his name and address, and he'll be glad to help you out. Remember the Salvation Army, the Free Clinic, and the Du Bois Food Pantry this Christmas season. Thank you.